Hello, Big Ten fans, and welcome back in to another episode of the Big Ten Blitz. As always, I'm your host, Sean, and today we're going to be getting into some NFL draft action. When this episode releases, we'll be just 10 days away from the NFL draft, so really starting to sneak up on us. And a couple months ago, we did a segment called Silent Stars of the NFL Draft, where we went through some Big Ten players that, you know, you probably wouldn't expect to hear their names called until day three of the draft, but players I thought would really move up during the draft process and could surprise a lot of people during their rookie season. And today, we're going to do a switch angles here and be focusing on the best players coming out of the Big Ten schools in the 2024 NFL Draft. All of these guys we're talking about today, you should expect to hear their name called on the first 2 days of the draft. We have 14 guys that we're going to break down, the four quarterbacks out of Big Ten schools that are garnering first-round consideration, and then my top five skill position players out of the Big Ten, and my top five defensive players. So 14 players total, and yes, we are including USC, UCLA, Washington, and Oregon in this. Even though those players didn't play in the Big Ten when they were in school, so these schools are officially part of the Big Ten, and there's some really great prospects coming out of those former Pac-12 schools now, so it's just a lot more fun if we include them now. So going to dive right in. No point in wasting time. We're going to start off with the quarterbacks, and the number one Big Ten prospect, number one quarterback prospect in the entire NFL draft, Caleb Williams, should not be any surprise. And I do not recall a player having just being talked about as much as Caleb Williams has throughout this NFL draft process. So don't think I have to break him down too much. Simple enough, he has unreal talent, and on talent alone, he is the obvious number one choice. Just what he's able to do with his legs to extend plays, and the throws he's able to make down the field. His downfield accuracy is incredible, and his tendency to get out of the pocket and keep his eyes downfield. He can throw the ball from a million different angles. Doesn't even really need to step into a throw to have it go 60 yards downfield. His highlight reel is as good as any college player you can find. And there's people saying that, you know, Jaden Daniels could push him for the number one overall pick, or there's some teams that value Jaden Daniels more. And I think anyone that's saying that is either lying and just trying to do it for some attention, or for lack of a better word, is stupid, because Caleb Williams is the clear number one pick in this draft. That being said, I do think Caleb Williams is a far cry from the generational talent that he's being touted as. And I've heard people say he's the best prospect since Andrew Luck, best prospect of the 21st century, best prospect we've ever seen come into the NFL draft. And I would not go as far as saying that for Caleb Williams, because ironically enough, he actually has very similar concerns as Justin Fields did when he was coming into the league. And that's really pocket presence and getting and having consistent, quick, scheduled on-time throws from the pocket. What he is able to do is manipulate the pocket really well when it stays intact. When kind of those tackles start to get pushed a little bit, he can move to the side, step up into the pocket. And as long as the pocket kind of stays intact for the most part, he has no problem sitting in there and delivering throws. It's when there starts to become some free rushers or guys that really have a chance of getting a hand on him, when someone's able to go right around the tackle and he, you know, we have a free rusher there, or we have a blitzer that's unaccounted for, or someone's able to move the guard on the inside and there's a hand coming in towards Caleb Williams. It's those sort of instances where Caleb Williams loses his pocket presence a little bit and he defaults to, I got to get out of here. And what he doesn't do a whole lot, or what I haven't seen him do a lot, is step up into the pocket, through the pocket, and go up towards the line of scrimmage and run that way. What I see Caleb Williams do a lot is run backwards. And at the college level, he is athletic enough to get away with that and make some remarkable plays. But running backwards in the NFL will get you in a lot of trouble. You know, he's going to end up taking a lot of sacks because of that. And the athletes that they're on the edge in the NFL won't let him get out of the pocket. So it's going to be, honestly, either a sack or an intentional grounding if he tries to pull that off in the NFL. And I've seen him run backwards a lot. And that's a major red flag for me, because, you know, the pressure is only going to get worse in the NFL. And I also think that Caleb Williams is a little reluctant to take the quick read, take the quick check down, or the underneath route. And a lot of it could have been the play calling at USC too, and the fact that they had virtually no defense and there was a lot of pressure on this USC offense to score every time they touched the ball. But it seems a lot like Caleb Williams presses a lot to make the big play and can be reluctant to take those check down throws. And that's something that a good NFL quarterback has to be able to do, has to be able to take what the defense gives him. And we saw that with Justin Fields a little bit too. Justin Fields was definitely one in college and early in his NFL days to try to play hero ball and try to make something out of nothing when really there is just nothing there. And it's okay to just throw the ball away or dump it off to your running back for a check down. So those are the two areas that I'm concerned about Caleb Williams. And he is far from a finished product. And I think he has to develop a lot to get to be the quarterback that a lot of people, including myself, thinks he can be. But that being said, Caleb Williams still has ridiculous talent, ridiculous athleticism. He's a great scrambler, and he's not overly reliant on running. When he gets out of the pocket, unlike Justin Fields, his instinct isn't to take off up the field. He keeps his eyes downfield, and he's going to be able to generate a lot of big plays, even in a rookie season, because of what he can do with his arm and his legs. So far from a finished product, I don't think he is this generational talent that's going to come in as a rookie and put the league, you know, turn the league upside down and have a 4,000-yard, 30-touchdown season and bring the Bears to the playoffs. No, he has to develop way too much to see those kinds of results. But on talent alone, Caleb Williams is the clear top pick. And he would be the number one pick in most drafts that I can remember. So as far as where I see Caleb Williams going, and it's a formality at this point, he's going to the Bears. So really, the NFL draft this season isn't starting until pick number two, and that's a good fit for him. And he is stepping into a situation that's much better than what Justin Fields stepped into. They have enough pieces around him, so he's not walking into a train wreck. And, you know, there is reason that the Bears can win 7, 8, 9 games with Caleb Williams at quarterback this year, with the kind of moves that they've made this offseason. But if I were the Bears, I'd at least throw some feelers out there to see what you could get for that number one overall pick. Because frankly, if you could find someone that'd be willing to give you 3 or 4 first round picks, 3 or 4 day 2 picks, and a couple quality players, you know, maybe quality backups or something like that, I feel like that is a much more concrete path to sustained winning football than putting all of your eggs in the Caleb Williams basket. Because listen, every NFL team wants to have the next Patrick Mahomes or Joe Burrow. But it is nearly impossible to identify those guys and take a quarterback knowing that he's going to become a top 5 quarterback in the league. And I think even with a generational prospect like Caleb Williams, there are a lot of red flags and there is a lot of scenarios that I could see unfolding where Caleb Williams just doesn't meet his potential. And he's maybe, I wouldn't be shocked 5 years from now if Caleb Williams is a fringe starter just because he's not able to develop the areas that he really needs to develop. But if you're able to get, like I said, 3 or 4 first-round picks, 3 or 4 day 2 picks, and a couple quality players for that one pick, that is how you build a great winning roster. And you could still do that and get a quality rookie quarterback in this class that has a really high ceiling. So if I were the Bears, I would at least feel out those feelers and see what you could get. And again, this is a complete hypothetical, but it's fun for this exercise. If the Bears did look to trade that number one pick, who in this draft would leverage their future to go after a quarterback like Caleb Williams and have it make, you know, some sort of sense? How about the Raiders? Because honestly, the Las Vegas Raiders are not as far away from being players in the AFC as some people think. They're still far away from challenging the Chiefs and, you know, competing for an AFC championship. But this roster is not complete bare bones, as horribly as last year went for them. I mean, they still have Devontae Adams, who's easily a top 10 receiver in the league. Jacoby Myers is a great wide receiver too. I think that tandem is a top 10 wide receiver duo in the NFL. They have a really underrated offensive line that's certainly in the top half of the league, might even be a top 10 offensive line, was really the saving grace of that entire offense last year. And they have one of the best defenders in the entire NFL in Max Crosby. You know, you give them a quarterback like Caleb Williams, there's reason to believe they could win 8 or 9 games this year and kind of be in that AFC playoff picture. And also, you have to keep in mind the division that the Raiders play in. I mean, obviously, Patrick Mahomes is not going anywhere. Now, Jim Harbaugh and Justin Herbert teamed up with the Chargers. It might not happen this year, but they are going to be a problem in the AFC. They're going to be able to run and throw the ball all over you. And then even the Broncos, they do not have a bad roster. With Sean Payton going into his second season, they figure to be making a big upgrade at quarterback. So if you want to be competitive in this division over the next 5-10 years, you're going to have to be able to throw the ball. The Raiders right now are not really in a drafting position to grab a great quarterback. So of all the teams that could theoretically leverage their future to go up and get this number one pick, I'd love to see the Raiders. Also because I just think Caleb Williams in Vegas in those uniforms would be so exciting. It would be such a spectacle. Love him or hate him, he is must-watch football, and putting him in Vegas with his play style, I think would just be absolutely electric and make those games even more fun to watch than they already are. So if there's a team out there that could trade up with Chicago to go get Caleb Williams, I'd love to see Vegas. But again, this is strictly hypothetical. The Bears are taking him as they should, and it'll be really interesting to see how his rookie season unfolds. And behind Caleb Williams is where the quarterback position gets really interesting. The second quarterback out of the Big Ten and my number three overall quarterback is J.J. McCarthy. And I've been a huge proponent of J.J. McCarthy going back to beginning of last season. I thought coming into 2023, he's a first-round caliber quarterback. I've been defending him. I've said that if he was on Ohio State, he would have had 4,000 or 5,000 total yards. He would have been a Heisman finalist, and Ohio State would have won the national championship. I mean, he's that good of a quarterback. And you know, physically, there isn't much he can't do. He's got a huge arm. He showed off in his pro day, you know, what he can do throwing the ball on the run. He is consistently accurate near the line of scrimmage, and he's a really underrated athlete. He's going to be one of the faster players on the field whenever he's on there. And you know, he's done nothing but win in high school and college. And you know, he's played a lot of games, and he's taken a lot of hits, and he's been durable. The one area of his game that definitely concerns me a little bit is his downfield accuracy, because he's had some absolutely beautiful throws down the field. But the further downfield he throws the ball, his accuracy can be a little bit more inconsistent. And you know, there are a lot of instances where I've seen him try to push down the ball down the field, and it just floats on him, and he's not giving his receivers a chance to catch the ball. That could also have to do with the quality of receivers he was throwing it to at Michigan. Roman Wilson was his clear number one option, and he's probably a third round draft pick in this draft. So he wasn't throwing to elite talent like we see Ohio State quarterbacks throw to. But even J.J. McCarthy has all the tools to be a really great quarterback. And his, you know, biggest red flag and his biggest knock on this during this draft process is his lack of passing volume in college and not being asked to go win a lot of games on his arm alone. And you know, that's certainly a valid concern, but I don't think that will impact what kind of quarterback he ultimately becomes. I think that lack of passing volume in college and what he was asked to do will have more of an impact on how long he takes to develop. And so because of what he wasn't asked to do a whole lot at Michigan, I think it might take him a year or two to finally find his footing in the NFL. He wasn't asked to go throw the ball 30, 40 times and win this game on your arm alone. There wasn't a lot of high pressure instances where J.J. McCarthy had to fit the ball in a tight window to go win a game. So C.J. Stroud was asked to do so much at Ohio State, and I think that's a big reason why he was able to step into the NFL and really take it by storm in his first season. J.J. McCarthy won't be able to do that. But even so, I have him as the second-ranked quarterback out of the Big Ten, again, third overall, because I think he has a really high floor as a quarterback. Even though he might take a season or two to really get his footing, I think he is as safe as a quarterback as there is in this draft. Partly because he's a great leader, great locker room guy, great hard worker. He was really the catalyst that flipped the culture at Michigan. I think he can do that for an NFL franchise as well. And he's also a great decision maker, has had one of the best touchdown to interception ratios over the past couple seasons in all of college football. That being said, I don't think he has the talent to really single-handedly elevate a bad team or take a fringe playoff team and single-handedly make them a Super Bowl contender. I look at J.J. McCarthy's career, and I think his ceiling is somewhere near like Matthew Stafford, and his floor is somewhere near Ryan Tannehill. So he's probably not going to be a top five quarterback at any point in his NFL career, but I think he is, out of all the quarterbacks considered for the first round this year, 5 years from now, I am most confident that J.J. McCarthy will still be around and still be a starter. I could see a scenario for all these other quarterbacks where they fall off a cliff and they get out of the rookie quarterback and not all, the entire league doesn't view them as a legitimate NFL starter. J.J. McCarthy, I don't have that concern. He doesn't have the highest ceiling out of the draft, but he certainly has the highest floor. And having a career range between Ryan Tannehill and Matthew Stafford seems really safe and is certainly worth a first-round pick. As far as what teams I want to see J.J. McCarthy go to, I really would hope that he doesn't get picked in the first three draft, in the first two picks, you know, by the Commanders at two or the Patriots at three, just because, like I said, he has a high floor, but I don't think he has the talent to really elevate those offenses the way he would need to, because the Commanders and the Patriots, they're just so far from complete rosters. I don't think J.J. McCarthy alone is going to take them to where he needs to be. And there are rumors that the Vikings are going to trade up to try to get J.J. McCarthy, but they also have a lot of other holes to fill at the tackle positions, a pass rusher, defensive line, secondary, and that they're in a division with really two powerhouses with the Lions and the Packers. They're going to have to be able to throw the ball downfield consistently. I'm not sure J.J. McCarthy is the quarterback to be able to, you know, run the offense the way Kevin O'Connell wants to. Where I would love to see J.J. McCarthy end up is a situation where he doesn't have to play right away, where he can sit behind a quarterback and learn, get his footing, and step into a starting role in 2025 or 2026. And two teams I think would be great for J.J. McCarthy are the Seahawks and the Rams. Both of those places, they have quarterbacks set in place for this season, maybe even 2025 as well. Again, won't have to step in. Two really solid franchises that have been winning pretty consistently for the better part of this past decade. Really well-run franchises and have a litany of offensive skill position players at his disposal whenever he would step into that starting role. The Rams, obviously, Sean McVay, one of the best offensive minds in the NFL. They have Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua, and Kyron Williams at running back. The Seahawks have DK Metcalf and Jaxon Smith-Njigba and Kenneth Walker, all of whom seem to be will be in Seattle for the foreseeable future. So both of those positions, I think, would allow J.J. McCarthy to really just ease into his starting role and hit the ground running once he gets on the field. But both of those teams are picking in the back half of the draft. So I think if this, the way J.J. McCarthy's draft stock is gone, if they want McCarthy, they probably will have to trade up and get him. And you know, trading up for a quarterback, you're not going to start year one. I don't know how great of an idea is that is. I know the Packers did it really well with Jordan Love, but the 49ers also tried to do it with Trey Lance, and that went horribly. For two teams that I think are ready to compete in the NFC, I don't know if trading away assets to get a quarterback of the future is the best idea. So out of the teams in the top half of the draft that might take J.J. McCarthy to start this year, the place I think would be the best fit for him isn't Minnesota, it's Denver. In that Sean Payton offense, because I think he can be exactly the quarterback that Sean Payton wants. Think a lot of Drew Brees and his time in New Orleans. There weren't a ton of downfield shots. He didn't push the ball more than 30 yards downfield on a whole lot of his throws. What Sean Payton wants out of his quarterback is really a point guard, a ball distributor, someone to make quick reads, someone to make the right read and get the ball out quickly and accurately, make a lot of reads and a lot of throws at or near the line of scrimmage, and essentially just be that ball distributor, be that point guard. And I think J.J. McCarthy can be that exactly what Sean Payton needs. And you also have to talk about the culture in Denver, which I think needs a little bit of makeup. It seemed really toxic last year. I think it's a good step to get Russell Wilson out of there and start clean. But there needs to be some work done on the culture in Denver. And I think J.J. McCarthy is the exact type of guy you want if you want to hit reset and start a whole new winning culture. So I think J.J. McCarthy, if he's going to get picked in the top half of the draft by someone who is going to want to start him in his rookie season, I think Denver is the perfect place for him. My number three quarterback coming out of the Big Ten is Michael Penix Jr. out of Washington. And honestly, it seems the general consensus for quarterbacks this season is you have Caleb Williams at the top, then you have Jaden Daniels and Drake May as 2-3 in the next tier. And then you have J.J. McCarthy right below them. And then you have Michael Penix and Bo Nix at the bottom, at the fringe first-round quarterbacks. That seems to be the general national consensus. But in my opinion, I see it a little bit differently. I still have Caleb Williams at the top. You know, Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy, Michael Penix, and Drake May. I have all four of those guys lumped together as really high-end quarterbacks with plenty of question marks. And all four of those guys, I think, are worthy of a top 10 pick. And I certainly have Michael Penix in there, and I think the difference between him and J.J. McCarthy is razor thin. I do have him right up there next to Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy. Because frankly, there isn't a whole lot that Michael Penix can't do. He has an absolute rocket for an arm, probably maybe the biggest arm in this draft. I think he's the most consistently accurate quarterback out of all the quarterbacks in this draft. He's been a 5-year starter, essentially, at Indiana and Washington. He's been asked to win a whole lot of games on his arm, and he has great pocket presence, great footwork. and he really underrated speed. He ran, I think, a sub 4.5 40 at his pro day. And he's great on the run, too. He can run sprint to his run or left and still throw dots 30 yards downfield. And I know people are enamored with what Caleb Williams can do outside of the pocket and some of the throws that he can make, but Michael Penix, he might have a better arm than Caleb Williams. It is really something to watch him throw the ball. It feels to me like his biggest flaw is his injury history and his age, because he's going to be 24 before this season starts, which is already as old as I think Joe Burrow is. But, you know, frankly, I'm not quite as concerned as other people seem to be. And he did have three consecutive season-ending knee surgeries when he was at Indiana. But I'd be much more concerned about that if it had happened in one of these past two seasons. But he put those issues to rest for me, because he's gone through two seasons at Washington where, you know, he hasn't been injured. He's thrown the ball a lot. He's taken a lot of snaps and a lot of hits. And he's proven time and time again to be durable, to be able to stand strong in the face of pressure and lead this team. And yeah, he probably is starting behind the eight ball a little bit as far as what his body can take. But I think this is more of an issue of longevity in the NFL. I don't think these injuries will impact the kind of quarterback he is in his peak. What I mean by that is Michael Penix, with his injury and with his age, he might only have 8 to 10 years in the NFL of playing at his peak and being an elite quarterback. And I would be surprised if we see Michael Penix be a 15-year NFL starter with what we've seen in his past. But frankly, worrying about your quarterback's health when he's 32, 35 years old seems like not something you should really be worrying about during the draft. He might not even be on the same team that drafted him when we get to that point. When you're looking at these rookie quarterbacks, I think what you first and foremost have to ask yourself is, what can this quarterback do for me in these first 5 years? And frankly, I think Michael Penix is the most NFL-ready out of any of these quarterbacks, with what he was asked to do, the number of snaps he's played, and what Washington asked of him in that offense. Out of all of these six quarterbacks that are garnering first-round attention, I think Michael Penix is most ready. If the season were to start tomorrow, I think he'd be most ready to step into a starting spot and have a flawless transition from college to NFL. Just everything from his leadership to his decision-making to his footwork to his accuracy and ball placement, there isn't a whole lot that he cannot do. So I'm obviously much higher on Michael Penix than the national media seems to be. So as far as an NFL team fit for Michael Penix, I want to see, there's one team that I really think needs to get him, and that's the Minnesota Vikings. Because, you know, in Kevin O'Connell's offense with Justin Jefferson, you know, they have a good group of receivers, TJ Hockenson at tight end. They brought in Aaron Jones at running back. Out of all the NFL rosters that might get a rookie quarterback, they are easily the most ready to have most quarterback friendly, I should say. And Kevin O'Connell, he likes to take deep shots. He is a complete opposite of the Sean Payton offense, where it's a lot of dink and dunk, quick decisions. He really likes those deep passing concepts, and they ask a lot of their quarterback to make a lot of, you know, advanced reads and really watch those safeties and try to find those opportunities to take shots. And, you know, he wants a quarterback with a big arm that can accurately push the ball downfield and layer the football as well, and be able to fit the football between, you know, the cornerback and the safety on the sideline. It's definitely more demanding playing quarterback for the Vikings in Kevin O'Connell than some of these other places, but I think Michael Penix can step up to it. And, you know, if I'm the Vikings and your choice is to trade up for J.J. McCarthy or stay at number 11 and get Michael Penix, I think they would be much better off staying put at number 11 and getting Michael Penix. I think that's a match made in heaven. You know, with, like I mentioned, Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison, I think this offense could end up looking a lot like the Dolphins offense with Tua, Tyreek, and Jalen Waddle if they add Michael Penix. It could be really exciting. And I think this is the way for the Vikings to go get right back into the thick of the NFC North and start contending for the playoffs again. And, you know, another side note, it would allow Michael Penix to stay in that purple, which he rocks so well. I think that would be an absolute slam dunk fit. Really hope the Vikings get Michael Penix. And then the fourth quarterback coming out of the Big Ten this year, or a Big Ten school, I should say, is Bo Nix. And frankly, I'm definitely least optimistic out of Bo Nix out of any of these quarterback prospects. Like I said, I have those five I think are all worthy of a top 10 pick. Bo Nix, I have more of a fringe first rounder. And listen, he's got talent, don't get me wrong. He's a good scrambler. He can be a threat with his legs. And he's started a boatload of games at Auburn and at Oregon, and the career progression that we've seen, because the quarterback I remember seeing at Auburn in 2019 would have never imagined that that kid could get drafted in the first round, but he has improved so much. And I think that speaks volumes for how he could improve once he gets to the league. So a lot of hope there. And he's been that ball distributor that I mentioned that Sean Payton really likes. He's been that for Oregon the past two seasons. He really mastered that offense and had the best touchdown to interception ratio out of any quarterback in the country the past couple seasons, makes great decisions, really accurate near the line of scrimmage. So I think he also, like JJ McCarthy, has a pretty high floor. But the reason I'm not super high on him, yes, I mentioned he is a good scrambler and can be a threat with his legs, but he's definitely the worst athlete out of these six quarterbacks. And it's interesting to see as the NFL continues to develop year by year, a quarterback's ability to extend plays and scramble and make throws on the run and really improvise, I think is becoming more and more of not a nice to have, but a must have. And that's just something that I don't see Bo Nix being able to do. He also doesn't have great arm strength or really a proven record of accurate throws down the field. He benefited a lot from yards after the catch, which is to his credit. You know, you have to be able to put the ball on the money to maximize yard after the catch. But I think his statistics were really boosted up by that. He also had an elite group of receivers that oftentimes were running wide open down the field. So, you know, just looking at his film, there are not a whole lot of instances of Bo Nix really fitting the ball into tight windows deep down the field. He's still a great decision maker. He truly mastered Dan Lanning's offense this past season. But out of all the quarterbacks, I think he has the lowest ceiling and his floor isn't quite as steady as I think JJ McCarthy's is. So that's why I have him a little bit lower. I do think, so if JJ McCarthy ends up going in, you know, the top in the first 5 or 10 picks, Denver could end up taking Bo Nix instead of JJ McCarthy. And I think he could, again, be a very similar ball distributor, like quick reads near the line of scrimmage. So I think he could be great for Denver, but I already said Broncos would be a great pick for JJ McCarthy. So not going to cheat and say the same team for two different quarterbacks. What I think would be great is if he ends up with the Giants, if they can get him with their early second round pick, because whether they want to or not, they have Daniel Jones on the books for this season. They should stick with him, start him for the season, see if maybe he can get a little bit of that 2022 magic and resemble more of, you know, that version of Daniel Jones. Because, listen, he's not a top 10 quarterback by any means, but as the quarterback market continues to inflate, I think having a reliable starter for $35 million a year, it's actually not a bad plan, especially if you're really rebuilding a roster like the Giants are. So they could draft Bo Nix, a low cost in the second round. I think we'll be capable of starting games as a rookie if Daniel Jones doesn't work out or he gets hurt again. So I think he could be a perfect option for the Giants because with their number six pick, I think they have too many holes to try to grab a quarterback at that position. They could try to trade up. But again, they have so many holes throughout their roster. I think they're definitely more than a quarterback away. I think they'd be much better off taking maybe Malik Nabers with that pick, or maybe even trading back, getting more assets, and just trying to build this roster. And you know, getting Bo Nix in the second round, I think would be great value and could end up being their quarterback of the future. Who knows? But the Giants might have to trade up back into the first round to get him. And if there's a team in the back half of this first round that I think could take Bo Nix, how about the Cowboys? I know at face level, it seems crazy, but no, I don't think anyone has a firm read of what's really going on in Jerry Jones's mind and what's going on in Dallas, because they have to re-sign Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, and Micah Parsons. And as time goes on, it seems more and more likely that they won't be able to keep all three of those. And Dak Prescott has had his opportunities. I know a lot of Cowboy fans are soured on him. And you can win with Dak Prescott, certainly, but if they're going to have to extend him at $55 or $60 million a year, that's really going to cripple this roster. So if I'm Jerry Jones, why not cut ways with him? Why not cut ways with a quarterback that has consistently not performed in the playoffs, save $55 or $60 million a year to build up this roster, and then get a quarterback like Bo Nix, who, again, doesn't have a huge ceiling. He's not going to be a top five quarterback, but I think even as a rookie, he can step in and manage this team. It's also worth saying that playing in Dallas is not easy. There's a lot of pressure. There's a giant microscope when you record it back in Dallas. And I think someone like Bo Nix, who has started a boatload of games, has been a really reliable leader in the locker room. I think someone like him could really handle it and take the baton from Dak Prescott. But we've seen crazier things out of Dallas. And out of all the teams in the back half of the draft who aren't super quarterback needy, I could see the Cowboys taking a run at Bo Nix. And that'll do it for the quarterbacks. Really excited to see how that room pans out. And I genuinely think that there's going to be five quarterbacks taken in the first 12 picks. So it's just going to be really exciting to see how that all pans out. But now we can pivot and talk about the top five offensive skill position players coming out of the Big Ten. And number one should come as no surprise at all, Marvin Harrison Jr. And what everyone thinks Caleb Williams is as a quarterback prospect, Marvin Harrison actually is as a wide receiver prospect. He genuinely is, I think, one of the best wide receiver prospects the NFL has ever seen. I think you can definitely say he's the best prospect since Julio Jones or Calvin Johnson. He is just outrageously talented because there truly is nothing he can't do. He has developed his route running so much at Ohio State. You can line him up anywhere you want. You can line him up in the slot if you want. He can gain separation against the NFL's best cornerbacks with route running alone. But he is a freak athlete. He does have the speed to take the top off the defense. I think there's very few cornerbacks who can run with Marvin Harrison. And obviously his strength is his jump ball ability, his ability to go win one-on-one matchups because he has the size, he has the strength, he has the hands, the anticipation, hand-eye coordination, and the balance. One-on-one coverage against anyone in the NFL, I think all you have to do is throw it up and Marvin Harrison can go get that ball and get 2 feet in bounds. He is just so supremely talented. And I don't think there's a whole lot to break down with him because he is the best wide receiver in this draft. And I genuinely think he can walk into the NFL as a top 10 wide receiver. So where does Marvin Harrison go? As far as best fits for him, frankly, he'd fit any NFL team. I don't think there's an NFL team out there that would say no to Marvin Harrison on their roster. He would make any team better. He is a plug and play guy because I think he can fit any style you play on offense. That being said, we really wouldn't expect and would hope he doesn't go to the Commanders or the Patriots because having a great wide receiver alone is not going to translate to wins. If you have your quarterback situation figured out, you pair him with a great receiver, and that connection can really result in a lot of wins. I think Calvin Johnson is a perfect example because when he got into the league, he was immediately a top 10, top 5 receiver. The Lions still sucked. It wasn't until Matthew Stafford got to the Lions and had a few years under his belt that connection really took off, and that's when the Lions started having winning records and got to the playoffs a couple times. So the Commanders and the Patriots on the offensive side of the ball have so much to improve. Having Marvin Harrison alone is not going to result in wins. So I would hope that they don't take him and they focus on figuring out that quarterback room. And then the Cardinals at number 4 make perfect sense. Murray has only had a true number one receiver for a couple seasons. Said he's been in the NFL, and that was when he had a healthy DeAndre Hopkins. And that was the Cardinals' best season by far. And he hasn't had it since. And I think Kyler Murray reminded me a lot last year that he really is no scrub. He's not quite a top 10 quarterback, but he came off of a devastating knee injury, middle of the season, one of the worst rosters in the NFL. And he really elevated that team. He kept them in a lot of games, and he reminded me just how good Kyler Murray can be. He's definitely worth continuing to invest in if you're the Cardinals. And so why not go give him another a great wide receiver like Marvin Harrison? I think that connection can really elevate this offense and help the Cardinals get back into playoff contention in the NFC. But I think them, unlike the Bears, are willing to trade that pick, willing to listen to offers. So if there is a team out there that would be willing to give up a few first-round picks to move up at number 4 and take Marvin Harrison Jr. and have it make sense, I'm thinking the Jaguars. And first of all, they have not drafted well at all the past couple seasons, so maybe getting those first-round picks off their hands would benefit them. Mainly kidding there, but I think Trevor Lawrence, he's been getting a lot of heat lately, mainly because he hasn't lived up to the insurmountable hype that, you know, was set for him when he came into the league. You know, he was being touted as like a John Elway, Joe Montana type guy, and obviously he isn't that quarterback, at least not yet, but he's still far from a bust. His career trajectory right now is probably looking more like a Matthew Stafford or a Kirk Cousins than a Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or John Elway. You can still win with Trevor Lawrence, and I think he can still be a top 10 quarterback in this league. And the thing he's been lacking is, they had a good collection of skill position players around him, but he has not had a true alpha number one receiver that he can go to on every snap. They thought Calvin Ridley was going to be that last year. and he just did not quite pan out. Moving forward for the Jaguars, I think it's in their best interest to re-sign Trevor Lawrence. You have your quarterback of the future. That's when you try to go give him the number one receiver that he needs to really elevate this offense. I'd really like to see what Trevor Lawrence can do with a receiver like Marvin Harrison. Again, I don't think it's likely. The Cardinals are most likely to draft him, and that would be a great fit. Moving on, though, to the number two skill position player coming out of the Big Ten, we have Rome Odunze out of Washington. Well, he is a really great receiver. He's a fast vertical threat with great burst, a quick release off the line of scrimmage. He has a big catch radius and ideal size at 6'3", 215 pounds. So he has the size and catch radius needed to go win one-on-one balls. He can be a yard after the catch monster. He can be a red zone threat. He truly has all the tools to be a wide receiver one for a team. So even though he's probably wide receiver three in this draft, I still think he's a top 10 pick, or at least worthy of that. So where do I see Rome Odunze going? I think the Bears make perfect sense at number nine. There's only two teams above the Bears that really need a wide receiver, and that's the Giants and the Cardinals. Logically, they could take Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers. And I think the Bears taking someone like Rome Odunze to really bolster those skill position players would make a lot of sense. And I know on paper you might say, well, they have DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, so they don't really need to make this big investment in another receiver, especially in a draft like this that's so deep at receiver. But you have to keep in mind, Keenan Allen is in the final year of his deal. He's going to be 33 when that expires, so this seemed more like a one-year rental. DJ Moore only has 2 years left on his draft, and he's going to be 29 when that contract expires. So I don't think either of these guys are necessarily long-term options. I think they need a great, cheap wide receiver that can develop with Caleb Williams. And I think Rome Odunze is the type of guy that can would really help elevate Caleb Williams' game. Someone that can really just run under those deep balls that Caleb Williams likes to throw. If they decide to trade back, because there's been a lot of conversation that the Bears aren't going to want to keep that pick, they're going to want to trade back and get some more assets. So how about the Colts? You know, they have Anthony Richardson, who's entering his second season, but it still feels like his rookie year. I think he needs a little bit more help at wide receiver other than just Michael Pittman. And Anthony Richardson has an absolute cannon for an arm. He likes to take deep shots. So I think it would really benefit to him to have a speedy threat like Rome Odunze, who can also go up and win one-on-one battles. So I think that would really help Anthony Richardson try to, you know, make this transition to the NFL on what's hopefully his first full season as a starter. So moving on to our number three skill position player, sticking with wide receiver, going with Troy Franklin out of Oregon. And he's fairly similar to Rome Odunze. He's an elite deep threat. He ran a 4.4 40-yard dash. Again, great burst off the line of scrimmage, and he's a really savvy route runner, and he's great in open space. And he honestly reminds me a lot of Chris Olave, the difference being that he doesn't quite have that jump ball ability that Olave does, because Olave, even for a smaller receiver, he's as good as anyone in one-on-one battles, and he can make a lot of acrobatic catches. And that's something that Troy Franklin, he did it really well in 2022, kind of fell off last year, didn't win those one-on-one battles in jump balls, and had a few unconventional drops. That's why, you know, he's lower on the end here. By my count, there's 10 wide receivers in this draft that warrant a first-round pick. They're probably all 10 won't get picked in the first round because that sounds a little bit outrageous, but Troy Franklin is in those 10 elite receivers that I see. He's probably near the bottom of that group, but I would definitely say he's a top 10 receiver in this draft and wouldn't be surprised if he gets taken in the first round. If he does fall out of the first round, I would expect Troy Franklin to be off the board on the first 10 picks of day two. So as far as fits for Troy Franklin, there's actually a few. The Ravens, the Bills, and the Chiefs, they all pick in the bottom five of the first round, so he should be available for at least one of those teams. They all have three of the top five quarterbacks in the league today, and I think they would be quarterbacks that would be able to get the most out of an athlete like Troy Franklin. And especially Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, who have cannon for arms, you want to have someone with speed for these big-armed quarterbacks that can run under those deep balls. And I think Troy Franklin could be that for Josh Allen. He desperately needs a weapon. And the biggest weakness on the Chiefs during their Super Bowl run was that wide receiver room. I think Troy Franklin, with his speed and with how Andy Reid can utilize him, I think he could benefit Patrick Mahomes a lot. So for the fourth skill position player, Blake Corum, running back out of Michigan. He's my RB2 in the draft overall behind Jonathan Brooks from Texas. And he's not the flashiest running back, not the flashiest pick, but I think he is going to be supremely productive in the NFL. And he's got great vision. He's a very patient runner. and his small stature kind of allows him to hide behind the offensive line and then explode through holes and really get into that second level. I mean, he doesn't have breakaway speed. He's not going to be ripping off 60-yard touchdown runs in the NFL, but he's fast enough to be a good running back. And he has a devastating jump cut that can just embarrass defenders in the open field, but also allows him to cut back behind the line of scrimmage and find holes that other running backs wouldn't be able to find. And he's also a good pass catcher out of the backfield. He always keeps his legs moving. He's one of the hardest runners college football seen over the past few years. And he, you know, despite his size, he should be great in short yard situations. And you know, my biggest concern about Blake Corum is how long he'll hold up in the NFL. I already mentioned his smaller size. He's 5'9", 200 pounds. He tore his knee up at the end of 2022, and he has 731 touches in his college career. I remember in fantasy football, there used to be a curse of 300. It was if you have 300 touches one season, the next season, you're much more likely to have a steep decline and just not match that production again for your career. So already walking into the NFL with 731 touches, especially in the Big Ten, which is such a hard-hitting league, it's definitely a little concerning. But also, you know, the franchise running back doesn't exist anymore in the NFL. The trend really is to draft a young running back, work him like a dog for 4 years, not pay him, and rinse and repeat. Blake Corum, to be worth a second or third round pick, he doesn't have to have a 10-year career. If he can be healthy for 4 or 5 seasons and play in 14-plus games, he will absolutely be worthwhile a day two pick. So where would I like to see Blake Corum go? How about the Bengals? I think his vision and relentless running style will help a Cincinnati team that isn't great in run blocking and is really going to be missing that grit now that Joe Mixon is gone. And Blake Corum can be a three-down back and a reliable check down for Joe Burrow. And I think he just fits perfectly. Like, Cincinnati is trying to win now. They need a solution at running back, and Blake Corum is as good as any as they'll find in this draft. And they could get him potentially in the third round. So I think it just makes all the sense in the world for Cincinnati to go get Blake Corum. For the fifth skill position player, I think the top four were pretty clear out of the Big Ten. Marvin Harrison, Rome Odunze, Troy Franklin, and Blake Corum. The fifth one's kind of up in the air, but I changed it up for my number five skill position player and actually looked at the tight end room. And I'm going to go with Cade Stover out of Ohio State. I mean, Brock Bowers is the best tight end in this class by far, but I think Cade Stover could very well end up being the number two tight end out of this class. I mean, he's a great blocker on the perimeter and in space. He's a little slow off the line of scrimmage, but he still has good speed for the position. He has really reliable hands. He's a good route runner, and I think he could be a really impactful pass-catching tight end as a rookie. He has to improve as an inline blocker, and he probably needs to put on more size in order to do that, because he's not going to be able to block, you know, some of these huge interior linemen we see in the NFL as he's built right now. And he could be a little bit more consistent in coming down with jump balls over smaller defenders. We saw it at Ohio State a few times. He just is in the right position, can get his hand on the ball, but sometimes if there's a guy in his face, he has trouble bringing that down. And in the NFL, that's what you need your tight end to do. So he certainly has areas to improve, but I think he has all the tools needed to be a starting two-way tight end. Where would I like to see him go? Well, how about the Texans? Yeah, they have Dalton Schultz, but they have no tight end of note behind him. And the Texans could really benefit by having him bolster that room. Because then you give CJ Stroud, Diggs, Nico Collins, Tank Dell, Joe Mixon already on this team. And then you give him a second pass-catching tight end. I think that could make this offense nearly impossible to stop with all the different types of mismatches that they could create. Not to mention, Cade Stover spent 2021 and 2022 with CJ Stroud at Ohio State. They already have a good connection, and I think that could help turn Cade Stover into an impactful tight end earlier in his career. And now we're finally going to make a transition to the defensive players. And first off, I'm going to go with Leiatu Leitu out of UCLA, 6'5", 260-pound edge rusher, outside linebacker type of player. Few defenders in college football have been as productive as Leitu has for UCLA. And what I love about him is he can line up all over the field. He has great technique with his hands to beat tackles, but he also has the size and power to just bull rush smaller blockers. He's explosive off the line of scrimmage, and he's a really sure tackler in space. And I think every NFL team wants a pass rusher who can line up in a two-point stance, a three-point stance, or off the line of scrimmage as a linebacker. He can set the edge, He can attack the middle and run support, and he can run the passer. Like, he's just such a versatile pass rusher. Like I said with Marvin Harrison, there are very few teams that wouldn't benefit by having Leitu on his team. I do think that he is more skilled than Dallas Turner as far as like his pass rushing moves. He just doesn't quite have the frame and raw athleticism that Dallas Turner does, which is why I have him just behind him in the rankings. So I think for him to be a truly elite pass rusher and really meet his potential, he'll have to put on another 10 to 20 pounds. But you know, we've definitely seen bigger body transformations in the NFL. Where would I like to see Leitu go? How about the Falcons? They're picking at number 8. I think they make a lot of sense because they really need help along that defensive front. They need someone that can get after the passer so they can play with the lead, which actually might be happening more. Would also like to see Leitu on the Dolphins. If the Dolphins can, they probably need to trade up, I would imagine, to go get Leitu. But they need help all along that defensive line, and their linebacker room got absolutely decimated by injury last year. So I think maybe it would be worthwhile for the Dolphins to make a trade up to get someone like Leitu. My number 2 defender out of the Big Ten, Jerzon Newton, or we can call him Johnny Newton, out of Illinois. And I think he is one of the most underrated players in the draft. And honestly, if Newton was coming out of Ohio State or Alabama or a team that traditionally produces top-end talent, even like a Penn State, I think he would be a consensus top 10 pick. And honestly, I think in a lot of other drafts in history would be considered for the number 1 overall pick. And he has that type of talent. Easily the best defensive tackle in the draft. He has really good size at 6'2", 310 pounds, and he moves really well for someone with his size. He has really great instincts. He's able to read his keys and blocking assignments to find the gaps and locate the ball and be where he needs to be. He's great in run support. He can push the pocket and eat up blockers, but he's also a great pass rusher, especially for better than someone you'd expect at the defensive tackle position. He does have a good little range of pass rushing moves, and he can use his hands really well for a big guy. Honestly, my only concern for him is his motor, playing his best at every single snap. I've seen a few times at Illinois where he just appeared to take some plays off. You know, maybe that was because Illinois' entire defense last year was really molded around Newton, and they needed him to be a wrecking ball for them to get any sort of success. Instilling a motor like that into Jerzon Newton, I think, has more to do with the kind of environment that he gets picked at. So I think there are two teams in the top half of the draft that have a real need for someone like Newton. And I think both of these teams would be able to get the most out of him and make sure that he does have that motor on every single play. The first one is the Vikings, because they desperately need some size at defensive tackle, and they also need to bolster their pass rush. So they can kill two birds with one stone by drafting Newton. And also, how about the Rams? I misspoke earlier. They're not drafting in the top half of the draft, but the Rams have a massive hole to fill with Aaron Donald now retiring. I know that's impossible shoes to fill, but if there's a player that they could get in free agency or the draft that can take Aaron Donald's spot, it's Newton. I think he's as close to Aaron Donald as they could possibly find. They need some pass rushing help, and they need to fill Aaron Donald's hole in the middle of that defensive line. Two birds with one stone, because Newton can do it all from the defensive tackle position. My number 3 defender, Cooper DeJean, cornerback out of Iowa. And frankly, he's been my favorite Big Ten defender over the past couple seasons. He is so much fun to watch. And I have him right up there with Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo and Terrion Arnold from Alabama as the top cornerbacks in this draft. What I love about Cooper DeJean is he's more versatile than either of those guys. He is rumored to move to safety when he gets to the NFL. But the truth is, whether his official position is cornerback or safety, he's going to line up all over the field. Safety, cornerback, nickelback in the slot, maybe even linebacker. No matter what his listed position is, he has versatility to line up all over the field. And so he has all the tools to be a lockdown cornerback. He has great technique in man-on-man coverage. He has great instincts and knows where to be in zone. He has the size and strength to push wide receivers off the line and really smother them underneath. But he also has the speed to stay with them downfield, stride for stride. And he's also a great tackler in space. My favorite aspect of his game is his playmaking. Over the past 2 seasons, he has 7 interceptions, 3 of them for touchdowns, and he has 13 pass breakups. And honestly, I thought Iowa should try to use Cooper DeJean on offense, because he is just that explosive and that athletic in space. Their offense famously has been so inept that I thought they could use Cooper DeJean. But he's also a great return specialist, one of the best returners in all of college football over the past couple of seasons. So that's another facet that whoever drafts Cooper DeJean will be getting from him. My only concern out of Cooper DeJean, like looking at the tape, I don't see any weaknesses, but the general history of these hybrid type players and how they've generally struggled to find their role in a defense is a red flag. Biggest example is Buda Baker, who has for the Cardinals, who had all this talent and just hasn't quite lived up to it. I think that's more of a team by team issue and how you utilize these players rather than a hybrid defender just not working out in the NFL. I don't think that's just a blanket statement of fact you can really say. So I love Cooper DeJean. There are two teams that I would really love to see him go, and they're actually drafting in the back half of the draft. The first is the Bills. They have a huge need at cornerback and safety with the releases of Jordan Pryor and Tre'Davious White. And they're in a division with Tua in the Dolphins offense, now a healthy Aaron Rodgers and a replenished group of receivers in New York. So the Bills are really going to have to defend the pass if they want to win the AFC East again. So I think Cooper DeJean would be a great addition to that room. The second team I'd love to see him go to is Philadelphia, because their defense completely fell apart last year, especially in the back end of that defense. They finished 26th in the league in interceptions, 31st in passing yards allowed. So, I mean, their secondary was just simply a mess. The Eagles desperately need a lockdown cornerback who can make some plays for them and generate some turnovers, and Cooper DeJean is that guy. The Eagles are picking at 22, Bills are picking at 28. If the Eagles don't take him, I'd love to see the Bills try to trade up, because I think that would be a really worthwhile pick before another cornerback needy team like the Vikings or the Cardinals snag him, because they're picking between the Eagles and the Bills. My fourth defender out of the Big Ten is Chop Robinson, outside linebacker from Penn State. And I think he's one of three outside linebacker edge players that warrant a first-round pick, but I have him a step below Dallas Turner and Aletu out of UCLA, mainly because he is a difficult prospect to get a real read on. Because on paper, he looks like a top 10 pick. He runs a sub-4.5 40. He's 6'3", 255 pounds. He's put on nearly 40 pounds throughout college without losing his burst at all. You know, he's incredibly fast off the line. He wins with speed on the edge. That's honestly reminiscent of Micah Parsons, but he's also incredibly strong. He can set the edge and eat up blocks, and he plays with great leverage and has his leg drive on every play, which allows him to really overpower smaller tackles. So as far as just the strict physical specimen goes, Chop Robinson looks like a top 10 pick, but he hasn't shown great technique, and now, I think he relies more on being a great athlete than being a really refined pass rusher in college. And you know, his production that he's seen in college doesn't quite match the athlete that he really is. Over the past two seasons, he's only had 9.5 sacks and 17.5 tackle for losses, which you know is good production, but not what you would expect out of a specimen like Chop Robinson. And you know, his production actually went down last year compared to 2022. And it's just like overall inconsistency that I've noticed from Chop Robinson. Like he had an incredible game against Michigan. They could not block him, and he was a big reason why Michigan just abandoned the pass game in the second half. But then he was really neutralized against Ohio State, did not make a big impact on that game. I think he definitely needs to develop more of a catalog of moves that he can rotate through in order to become an elite pass rusher. And he's probably a work in progress. You can't expect him to be one of the league's better pass rushers. So as far as where I'd like to see Chop Robinson go, I think the Cardinals would be a good fit. They own the 4th and 27th pick, as well as 6 picks in the top 100. So I don't think Chop Robinson would fall all the way to 27, but they certainly have the assets to move up a little bit. And the Cardinals desperately need a pass rush. They were the bottom 3 in the league last year in sacks, pressures, quarterback knockdowns, pressure percentage, like pretty much any statistic that measures how well you got after the quarterback, the Cardinals were bottom 3 in the league. So I think that would be a really good fit. The 49ers could also be a sneaky pick for Chop Robinson. He wouldn't fall to 31. Again, they would need to probably move up to get him, but he'd be a terrific fit because they let go of so many of their top pass rushers behind Nick Bosa. So they're very thin at the position, but I think playing opposite Bosa would allow him to take advantage of a lot of one-on-ones. And I think that's how he could really work on his catalog of moves and develop as a pass rusher. And, you know, the 49ers, if they want to get back to the Super Bowl, they're definitely going to have to replenish that defensive front. And Chop Robinson would be a great fit for that team. So our final defender that we'll talk about, Minnesota safety, Tyler Newbin. And I think he's one of the more underrated players in this draft. This isn't an extremely strong NFL draft class for the safety position, But Tyler Newbiden is easily my top safety, and I think the only safety in this class that's worthy of a first-round pick. He has 46 starts over the past four seasons. He has an incredibly high football IQ. He knows where the ball is going and where he needs to be. He has the size and technique to man up receivers when he needs to, and he has the ball skills to make a play on the ball and come down with interceptions. He's also really good in run support. But like I said, he has good size for his position and is one of the surest tacklers the Big Ten has had over the past couple seasons. So he's really a do-it-all safety. My biggest concern with Tyler Newbiden is that he's not an incredible athlete, especially his speed. You know, he isn't one to get beat deep because he is such a smart player and he knows where he has to be. But if a receiver gets a step on him, Tyler Newbiden does not have the athleticism to really gain on him and make up that space. You know, his lack of speed also impacts his ability to defend the run a little bit because he knows where to be. But if he has to come up all the way from 20 yards down to fill a run gap, he can be a little slow getting there, which can be devastating if you get one of these NFL running backs in the open field. But I think he can step in immediately and be a really reliable starter and can be the source of a lot of turnovers and big plays for a team. Where would I like to see Tyler Newbiden go? I'd love to see him go on the Ravens. They should be. I said Tyler Newbiden is worthy of a first-round pick, but if we're being honest, I'd probably expect him to drop into the second round. And the Ravens should be able to get him in the second round so they can address more immediate needs in the first round. They already have Kyle Hamilton and Marcus Williams at safety, but they do need a third guy in that back end with the departure of Geno Stone. And in the Ravens' blitz-heavy scheme, I think they need guys in the back end who can patrol the field, play with instincts, and be in the right place. And that's what Tyler Newbiden does. And I feel like he fits that defensive culture in Baltimore really, really well. And that'll do it. Hope you enjoyed it. Again, NFL draft just 10 days away. Going to be really exciting to see where all these players end up and how the NFL draft unfolds. Appreciate you listening along. It's been a blast. Subscribe to our channel wherever you're listening, YouTube, Spotify, Apple. More episodes will be coming out. Check out our website, thefloorslap.com, where we have articles for football and basketball posted every week. And follow us on Twitter, @thefloorslap. So this has been the Big Ten Blitz. Appreciate you listening. As always, I've been your host, Sean. Hope you're ready for the draft, and I will catch you here again soon.